So in returning to Philippians tonight, I want us to return to our theme of the beauty of a selfless life. A beauty of a selfless life. And the last time that we looked at this together, we looked at Paul's statement, to live is Christ and to die is gain. And the great point that we saw there is that the way to live a selfless life is to be full of Christ. To make Christ our life, our all, our everything. And so more than about what we might try to lose, it's about learning to enjoy what we gain in Christ. So as we look at this opening statement of the letter in these verses 3 to 11, what we see tonight is that a selfless life is full of love for Christ's church. Taking Paul as our example, a selfless life is full of love for Christ's church. And in these opening words in the letter, he's concerned with the well-being of the church in Philippi, not himself. He's in prison and he's suffering. But he's so taken up with love for God's church. All he can think about is he wants to see them prospering in the Lord. He wants to see them spiritually flourishing. So he's praying for the church. I mean, what a thing. In chains or house arrest or whatever it was. But he's spending his day praying for them. Even when we're laid aside by circumstances, we could actually do the most helpful things of all. Come before God in prayer. And he's thinking about the church. And he says that his joy and his happiness comes from the church. And he's seeking to encourage the church. So we're seeing that Paul forgets himself because he's so full of love for the church. And he rejoices in what the grace of God has done and is doing and will do in them. He rejoices in what grace has done. In verse 5, he thinks back to the first day they heard the gospel and believed, when he'd first preached to them. Isn't that a great turn of phrase, that first day? Oh, if we just think about that, there was a first day when these sinners passed from death into life. A first day when they were born again and joined to Jesus Christ. That's a day to mark down for eternity. What a day. And there's a day like that for all of us. And as he's sitting in the prison, he's comforted as he's remembering this. How he preached, and there was this remarkable transformation. These pagans, these idol worshippers, these sinners, in a day became saints. The miracle of God's grace of justification in a day, in a moment. The life-changing power of Christ. And then he rejoices in what grace is doing. He rejoices in their ongoing partnership and fellowship. In verse 7, that word partakers, it's a form of the word koinonia, that word that is translated fellowship or communion. And he's rejoicing in how they are one, that this church is standing with him. They're side by side with him, in the sense that there's peace between them and love and affection, but also that they're working together for the gospel, that they're sharing in life together, and they've sent aid to him in prison. They're with him in what he's going through. They're in step with him in gospel ministry. So he's marveling at the grace of God that, you know, here's Paul, the sectarian persecutor, one with these Gentiles. And then he rejoices in what grace is going to do. In verse 6, he's confident that he who has begun a good work in them will complete it in the day of Jesus Christ. So complete it. He's rejoicing that the Lord is going to perfect, preserve his church to the end. He rejoices in God's keeping grace, the perseverance of the saints. But that they'll be complete. More than that God will just have his church survive or be maintained. It's going to be perfect on that final day. Made Christ-like, made glorious, without sin. And he's confident. He knows nothing's going to stop that. The church will be completed. So he's just filled, isn't he, here, with joy and love for the church. It's heart is filled with the church of Christ. So even in imprisonment, thinking not of himself, but them. And then these really almost like, you know, passionate words. He says in verse 8, you know, God knows his heart and how he's longing for them with the affection of Christ. Or as the old King James put it, with the bowels of Christ. Because that word affection, it's a word that in the Greek it means from the guts. Deep feeling. It's the same word that the scriptures use for Christ's compassion. When he looks on the sheep without a shepherd and he stirred up and he has compassion for them, this deep welling up from within of love and care for them. And Paul's got that same feeling. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Because here's these sheep without a shepherd. Here's their pastor kept from them. And he's stirred up with this same longing for them to know that they're doing okay. And so there's a lot there, isn't there? This is Christ's own love through Paul. This is what being a pastor or elder should be about. It's about that we are hopefully Christ-like, so that this loving compassion of Christ is in us and coming through us and coming to others. And it also is telling us, isn't it, that this selfless love we see in Paul flows out of his union with Christ, his communion with Christ. He's walking closely with Christ, and so there's much of the master coming through. And so we've got this statement, we have this wonderful example of selfless love. Now, none of this, who is sufficient for these things? This wonderful example isn't to remind us of how far short we fall. It's to stir us up, to inspire us, that we all want to be like this. How do we grow in this kind of selfless love and be filled with love for the church? Well, one thing that I think stands out in the passage is that we must fill our minds with thoughts of the church. See, there's this strong emphasis in the text on Paul's mind. All the kind of verbs here are kind of thinking verbs. But not like, you know, unconsciously thoughts just go through your mind. No, I mean, kind of active thinking. You know, when you've got to really make an effort to focus your mind on something. And the verbs here are all about Paul directing, controlling his thoughts to think about the church. He's renewing his mind by filling it with thoughts of the church. As he says in verse 3, some examples. He thanks God upon every remembrance of them. That means it's not just like random memories that sometimes pop up. No, he's recalling them to mind. He's intentionally doing that and thanking God. He's making sure that's time in his prayers that he's set down. He's going to stir up his memory. He's going to, you know, bring their faces and their names before him. And he's setting that time aside to think of them. Verse 7, he says, it is right for me to think this of you all. Now, the word think there in the Greek is phroneo. And again, it's like a strong, powerful kind of thinking. It means a recollecting, a shining of a light. It's this active effort that he's thinking of them in his mind, bringing them before. Verse 7, they're in his heart. Now, the heart in biblical language means, you know, you're inner thoughts. Not so much passions and emotions as we use that word today, but your conscious thought, what you're dwelling on within. And you could translate this as Paul is saying he holds them in his heart. I've seen some Bible versions translate it that way. He's holding them in his heart, strongly, tightly remembering them. All kinds of thoughts run through our minds every day, and it's a battle, isn't it, to control our thoughts. Especially when we come to pray. But he's actively working hard to fill in his mind with thoughts of the church. They are the front and center of attention. And he prays for them. He prays for them constantly. Paul's human just like us. I know he's an apostle. I know he's anointed with the Spirit in a special way. But he's human like us. And it must have been hard to pray consistently. Like we all find it hard to pray. It takes a lot of effort. It's habit and practice sometimes. And Paul is constantly praying for them. You're seeing in Paul a kind of discipline, working to hold the church in his heart. And if we want to develop this kind of selfless character, we've got to work hard at trying to do the same thing. We've got to practice praying for the church. We've got to recall people to mind. We've got to mentally hold them in our heart and resist distractions. I know some Christians do this, you know, they have prayer calendars or pictures, or there's phone apps, or you get prayer letters. Perhaps there are, you know, practical tools that can help. But ultimately, it's a daily spiritual battle. It's a daily discipline. It's a choice to hold the church there in our minds. But then just one more helpful thought that I think we see in Paul is, to help us do this, we should remember the glory of the church. That's the fuel that helps keep the fire going. We remember the grace of God, what God has done in saving us, in making his church. And as Paul's looking ahead to the glorious wedding day, the day of Christ, when the temple will be finished, when the bride will be spotless, that it will all be worth it, when she'll be filled with fruits of righteousness to the glory of God, when the church will be resplendent with Christ. You know, it's a bit like a father preparing for a wedding. That's apt. You know, there's bills to pay, there's getting the venue, but what makes all that hard work worth it is the joy of that day. What makes the builder dig the ditch and carry the heavy bricks is the day when, you know, the doors open and the building's finished. And that's what Paul's doing, isn't it? He doesn't see the mess the church is often in day to day, and the trials, the building site and the bills. He's got his eyes fixed on what she's becoming, individually and corporately. If we keep our eyes on that, oh, how it's worth it. What a beautiful thing. And we can be inspired to fill our thoughts with the church, be filled with love for the church, and we'll grow in selflessness like Paul.